Hello, welcome to the peer support discussion group for September the 3rd, 2013. We'll be discussing Steve Ozenich's The Great Pain Deception again tonight. It'll be chapter 3, Once Upon My Time. Steve Ozenich is here with us. We're very glad to have him here with us. He's took time out of his very busy schedule to be here, and this is so awesome. We spent the last 30 minutes talking about powerful healing words, powerful healing thoughts, powerful healing ideas. Steve's already given a lot of advice, and we're just going to proceed and go forth with, I believe, about how we've been doing before we even started the call here. We'll talk about the shadow that we didn't get to last week. And we will go into Steve's story starting at chapter 3 here. I'd just like to make the main disclaimer now that before we start, I do need to remind everyone that this is a peer support group. None of us are medical or mental health professionals. Now, with that being said, this is going to be a wonderful night. Gosh, before we even started, it's already been powerful. We'll go there now. Let me get to this. The shadow on page 36. It says the shadow knows. It says the shadow is the alter ego, the part of the self that has been repressed by the ego in order for relationships to mender and exist. The shadow contains both darkness and light, both the problem and the answers, to relieving pain and suffering. Now, when I read that last week, we pondered that thought about the personality, Steve, that we show the world, and then the part of us that is really us on the inside, which is, I would assume, the ego, and then on the outside is the personality that the world sees, and that's correct?
Yeah, I think that when I did that part, it really hit home with a lot of people. I have probably about 4,400 emails since the book came out last year, and they said, you know, you made it so simple. It's very confusing with all these psychological terms. And that's why people say, well, you know, Freud, you know, that's old stuff. I said, well, you know, I don't really care what mechanism I used. I just wanted to help people to understand where that divided mind was coming from. And Freud's was the simplest thing. So you have words like persona and superego. They're very closely related. But the persona is kind of like the manager of the superego. And then you got id, which is closely related to shadow and things like that. And I tried to keep it very simple. It's very hard to do. But the shadow was the most important aspect to me. I think Carl Jung was the brilliant psychiatrist there. I think he understood it more than Freud did.
You know, that's helped a lot of people.
To help them understand.
You said, you know, millions, actually, Jung and Freud's helped millions. But that shadow part.
Yeah. That's the part of the person that's undeveloped that we all have. Like Jung said, it's everyone carries a shadow. Uh-huh. The more that they're unaware of it and the more they pretend like it doesn't exist, the more powerful it becomes. And it becomes to control them at some point. It begins to dominate your life. And the people who accept it, okay, I've got this part of me that's undeveloped, it's immature, and it just wants things. You know, it doesn't really give. It's just a very primal part of me. Those people go on to live better lives. They're more balanced and more happy, you know. And so, and Jung said the famous line, he said, there's no coming to wholeness without imperfection. So that rings true for perfectionists, you know, that they try to control life with this superego, this outer core. And after so many years, they actually believe that that's them, that they're pretending to be. But deep inside, they're not happy. That's the divided mind. That connected with me in Dr. Sarno's book, The Mind Over Back Pain, the first one. Mm-hmm. he said it's a conflict between, you know, I should care about this person, but I really don't give a damn. On the other hand, you know, there's a part of you that doesn't care. There's a part of you that knows that it should care. So you got this responsibility that's butting heads, and it's creating this, well, it locks people up in the gridlock. They can't even function at some point.
You say, Steve, on page 37 of chapter 2, healing is contingent upon opening lines of communication with the shadow self. What do you mean by that?
you've got to get in there. Yeah, you know, that's, once again, you know, there's no one way in there. I know therapy, there's a lot of Jungian therapists out there that go after that stuff. I read a couple really good books on that too. The Shadow Effect, that was fantastic too. But for me, I didn't really dig into it much. I just came to realize, yes, there's this part of me. I guess I realize it because you can't sense it, that it wants to be taken care of, you know, but the person who's a TMS person usually taking care of other people, they're more responsible. And there's a part of everyone that just wants to be taken care of and wants to be loved for who that person is. You know, and this is the highest level of understanding TMS, is getting into these conversations about life. Because the TMS is it's a life problem. You know, it's not a physical problem. It's not a physical problem. And so when people get into these groups and they talk about their symptoms all the time, that's just detrimental. You know, you really need to be talking about the relationships and where you came from and where you're going and what your dreams are and things like hope and things like that. I never got that when I first started to heal. I saw all these top mind-body doctors talking about, you know, spending time with friends and things like that. And I thought, oh, I want to get past that stuff. I want to heal. But that's how you heal, is you get with your friends, you know, and you learn to laugh again and you learn to have joy again. I wasn't having any joy in my life at one point, I realized. But that's why Dr. Sarno's Mind-Body Prescription book helped me so much. The only thing I got out of that book that I didn't get out of healing back pain was that rage to soothe ratio. That one little line that he said clicked with me. And I realized, hey, my tension's not that high. I just had no joy to counter it. You know, I wasn't enjoying my life. You know, it was all about getting the job done. Push, 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 do it right, do it right, do it right. I forgot to stop and smell the roses, you know? And so I realized I've got to go have fun. And when I did, the pain began to dissipate. It took a lot of work though, a lot of physical work, a lot of reading, learning. And of course, writing the book helped heal a lot. Yeah, you know, I never really journaled to heal, but writing the book was journaling. You know, it was a very long journal. And took 10 years to write that book, and it was very cathartic. You know, there were a lot of tears in the first years of that book writing, and then after about the fourth or fifth year, you know, I was emotionally healed, and the last five or six years were just putting it together. So it's a process. You know, it's a healing process. People that heal right away, I suspect the placebo immediately. You know. Because how could you spend a lifetime getting to this persona, this personality, and all of a sudden just flip-flop like that, you know? And so, and usually they do come back, you know, a few months later, it moved into my knee now. So, and we, like Dr. Sarno said, it's very hard to change your personality. It is, you know, especially when you've constructed that over a lifetime. And so I didn't really change my personality other than I learned to look at things differently. You know, it starts with the thought process. You can't have a physiological reaction without a thought process. Well, if your thought process is coming from the superego, then it's doing what the superego does, what everybody else wants. It's based on their wants, what you think they want to see from you. And so what kind of life is that? What kind of joy can you get from living through a superego lens? You know, it's actually deadly. And at some point, I worked with some psychologists on that chapter. I went to all these college professors who were Jungian experts and Freudian experts, and I began to ask them, you know, am I right here? Am I saying the right thing? Because I didn't want to say anything that wasn't true. And they were, most of them were retired, the ones that were very receptive to talking. They'd done it for 30 years and retired. And, you know, they're saying that at some point the ego sells out to the superego. You know, the ego is supposed to look at the desires of the person and to what the other people want and come to a compromise. You know, and so we're living, trying to live for them and for ourselves at the same time. But if the ego sells out to the superego, It just lives for other people. It totally forgets all the shadow needs and all the id needs and all those things that the person wants, which are pleasure needs, basically. You know, the id wants pleasure, you know, sex and food and drinks and things like that. It wants those things, but we have to live with other people, so we have to have some type of ego. You can't get rid of your ego. It's not possible. You would be walking around with that clothes on every day if you didn't care what anybody else thought. You know, it would be a chaotic world. So we have to have some ego. So, yeah, it gets to be a complex thing. And then there's different types of philosophies. You know, Adler had his own thing, which I believe is true. He said, I don't believe in these ideologies of psychology. Because every single person is an individual. And you got to get to that person to heal them. And I think he's right there. And so, you know, I tried to keep it as simple as I could in chapter two. And I wanted to put that up front, so that people could see why I was talking about them in my own story. You know, so, but the TMS doctors were concerned that I might lose people right up front with the chapters one and two. They said, the heart of that book is your story. But if you go into all that theory, you might lose them. And so I said, I'll take the chance, because it didn't make any sense without knowing that stuff up front. And I think the hardest part of the book is the first few chapters to get through. It's very technical. I even said in chapter two, skip this if you want to. If you're in a lot of pain, you really don't need to know. You don't need to know chapter two to heal. But these TMS people are very knowledge driven. They want more information. They can't get enough. And so I put it in there. And they were very receptive to it. But
in chapter two, Steve, I detect a fracture, a discontinuity between the Jungian Freudian apparatus that you go into and describe in detail, and then the other sections of the chapter, like the autonomic nervous system, boring system number one, the sympathetic nervous system, boring system number two, the parasympathetic, and then the hypothalamus, because you can see those things as physical entities in your brain, you know, all of these systems, but how they connect to the overlay of Freudian and Jungian theory. You know, like, how does the superego connect with the hypothalamus? And how does the whole, you know?
Yeah, well,
you can get drawn off into neuroscience and miss the healing. Yeah. I know that if you're really detailed, but I noticed that tension between the way the brain actually operates and these models that we have from Freud and Jung, which
memorize. The reason that the autonomic nervous system ignites is tension. And that's why I put that phrase in there, what Freud said. He said, anytime that we don't get what we want, we get tension, Freud said. And stress is basically just what you wanted versus what you just got. That's where stress comes from. It's our wants in our lives, the things that we want, the cravings. And when we don't get that, tension rises. It's just a natural byproduct. So really, that's it. It's the psychological conflict between wanting and not caring raises the tension level, and the tension level ignites the sympathetic nervous system. I probably could have said it in three lines like that.
But well,
people want more information.
Yeah. Has anybody got a question for Steve on this?
Yeah, I'd like him to repeat what he just said. That was great.
I hope you recorded that, because I can't recall that.
Hi, this is Niffa. I just got on the phone not too long ago. I was listening to him. But, you know, the way you mentioned it, Steve, is the stress, and then, you know, because you didn't get what you wanted, and then from there you get the attention. I know exactly what you're talking about. And then after you get that tension, that's when you really start to feel a lot of pain. Well, I did, anyhow. I started feeling a lot of pain because I started getting tension in my body. But I know what you're talking about. But how do you release it, though? I mean, that's the question.
Yeah, that's a million-dollar question. You know, that's why it's complex. Anytime the brain's involved, it gets complex. But I think just up front, just to understand that there's conflict. Like Dr. Sarno proved, you don't need to dig in there and solve that conflict. At one point, Dr. Sofer wrote in my manuscript, be careful with this paragraph that you just wrote, because it suggests that they have to dissolve the conflict to heal, and they don't have to. And so I kind of just put it all in one line and I rephrased it. It was a lot of hard work, a lot of hard work, because there's so many theories, you know, and there's so many things to say about healing. It's a personal thing, intention. And to me, it's about letting go, you know, letting go of attachments in life, you know. And when you get to the highest levels of talking about mind-body healing, it really is those things that we crave and want. And we hang on to those with our very last ounce of life, and they drag us right under the water. And we drown in the things that we want, because we get more things if we just let go. You know, the old metaphor, you can't grab something new until you let go with your hands first. It's so true with your emotions. And so the very next to the last chapter in a book is a one-page chapter called Letting Go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a lot of these doctors that I worked with, they were in pain. Just about everybody flew in to see Dr. Sarno. That's why they became TMS physicians, because they were in pain. They probably wouldn't believe it themselves today had they not been pushed by the TMS pain. And they'll tell you the same thing, letting go. These people come into their offices hanging on to things, you know. I was divorced and I can't forgive my spouse, you know, 15 years later. I can't forgive them. And that own thing is damaging their own health. But that's part of the ego. You know, it stung their ego that somebody could actually reject them. But we've attached ourselves to them. We think that we're only whole people if this person's in our life. You know, and it becomes very philosophical at some point. But I know a lot of people have questions that they're not understanding it at that level. They have questions about TMS itself. So it might be better if you let them ask questions about TMS if they want to ask some things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's up to you guys. I don't know.
It's pretty awesome. Okay. Any more questions?
Now, this is Kyle. I have a question. Actually, in the synchronicity story, I ran across this wiki over the weekend and saw that there was a discussion group and made a note to call in. I didn't realize it was a book discussion group, but meanwhile, yesterday, completely unrelated, I downloaded Steve's book, and I'm about halfway through it. Did not realize this was going to be a discussion group about, but it's a fantastic book, I have to say. I'm highlighting just about a paragraph every page.
Thank you.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You can ask Steve whatever you want.
Yeah,
he's the big dog. You can ask Steve what you want. This is Steve's show.
A guy
One
York.
Question I have, it's about, and I think you may address this later in the book too, but it's about kind of getting angry with and yelling at that shadow. I've tried that a few times, and it feels like it actually sometimes works in terms of pain that's going on right at the moment, but it doesn't quite feel right in terms of, I feel like I'm yelling at myself.
Yeah, my message was not to get angry at it. Hopefully I didn't say that. It's to accept it as part of you, and actually to love, you know, it's loving yourself, because a lot of these people, they've been beat up in their lives, and they have low self-esteem, and they don't really love themselves. And so you really can't love anybody else until you learn to love yourself first, because we're the same thing. We're the same people. We're all just born of the same spirit. You know, we just have different experience in life. But it's very important that you accept that shadow part of yourself. Now, Dr. Sarno suggested to yell at your brain. You know, he said, because it seemed to work in some people, that's all. But I found out that made me worse, that I had to kind of be nicer to myself and say, I drove myself into the ground with every project. I'd have 10 projects going on at the same time. You know, got to be better, got to do better, got to outperform yourself. I realized, hey, just let go of that stuff. And start to be nicer to yourself. Stop driving yourself into the ground. And a lot of people have emailed me to say, yeah, being nice to myself was better than yelling at myself. Because, you know, you're tough enough on yourself. But if you're halfway through the book after last night, you're one of the fastest readers I've ever seen.
You know, I've been off the last 2 days, so I've been pretty much reading it straight through.
What kind of symptom do you have?
Well, actually, I, about 10 years ago, had knee pain off and on, and finally ended up pretty much resolving it over the last month, and immediately got upper back pain that I never had any back pain in my life.
There you go. Dr. Sarno's brilliant. That symptom imperative. It will just shift. You know, there's nothing. I mean, you can try to cut it out or inject it or take therapy for it. But like he said so brilliantly, you know, the brain will not be denied, he said, in that famous radio interview he did. The brain won't be denied. You can try everything you want. But if you have that psychological conflict, it'll just shift into the back. And then if you get rid of the back pain, it'll get into your shoulder. You know, and a lot of times they try to medicate the pain away and it will shift into anxiety, sometimes severe anxiety. So if the brain will find a way to complain if the person's not truly happy. And that's what the chapters 2 and 3 you're talking about is it's that conflict, you know. And I believe to me it was happiness. You know, I wasn't happy. And the best way to show that you're not happy is your body to start having all kinds of problems. And I don't know how old you are, but it would be rare for a knee to wear out, of course, and your back's probably fine. But hopefully the book will answer some questions for you.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. I have a new appreciation for back pain sufferers. I never realized how all-consuming it is.
It's hard to think about anything else. Yeah, I thought my knee pain was worse than the back pain. I think of all the pains that I had, and I think I had them all. although I didn't have migraines, and I always hated to say that because I didn't want my brain to remember that I didn't have migraines. Oh, yeah, we didn't get that one. But my knee pain totally disabled me. I couldn't roll over or left or right. With my back, I could function. I could get up and walk, hunched over and things like that. But I guess it depends on how hard it wants to grab onto you, you know. At some point, the scariest thing was the vertigo, and I started falling down, and my eyes were going back and forth with that nystagmus. That was frightening. And I've had a lot of people say, I've had that so many times, and now I understand what it is. Thanks for telling me. So the whole purpose of Chapter 3 was to basically run through my story real fast, explain all these things that I had, how a tragedy in my life kind of magnified them, you know, because trauma will magnify all the TMS, of course. And but I had TMS before that. And then when it gets into 4 and 5, starts talking about healing. And then the last part of the book is basically a philosophy on how to live a good life, as seen from my eyes, of course. But, you know, hopefully it just makes people think and see things a little bit deeper. Because anybody who's had TMS and healed from it, they know that everyone around them has it. Anytime you go anywhere, people can see it. Oh, he's got TMS. And yet they don't want to hear it. You know, no. My doctor told me I had a bad shoulder, and that's all they want to hear.
It was only us that it was in our head, but it's real in them.
That's good for you guys, but not me. My first radio interview, 3 months ago, my first radio interview was out of California, and she had this RSD, the host, and those guys healed almost all those RSD people. Dr. Sofer saw a lot of them, and he healed them, but she didn't want to hear it. You know, that's the thing you have. I've got this. But that's another brilliant observation on Dr. Sarno's part. The reason that it's there is to protect you from these emotions and thoughts, he said. And so, of course, you don't want to hear that it's not a physical problem. Of course, it's there to protect you. And my first reaction was to throw that book. I think that's in Chapter 3. Or is it Chapter 5? Threw that. I can still see it flying off my fireplace. It bounced off the fireplace. Yeah. I was doing some type of back therapy over this physio ball, this big physio ball, and I was reading it. And I got through the first couple chapters of healing back pain. I thought, this guy's insane. And so I threw it like this, and I remember it bouncing off this big fireplace. So my initial reaction was to reject it, just like everybody else. And so how the message is delivered is just as important as the message itself. Because they'll just walk away. Or they'll get angry. They'll actually throw things at you. I don't know if you guys have been talking about the lightning process, but a couple people emailed me to tell me that they had healed with my book and the lightning process, because it's a method to get rid of anxiety, which really helps. If you can reduce your anxiety, your TMS will disappear. And he says in that book that he gets death threats because he's helped people heal. Think about that. They reject it so bad, they're actually threatening his life because he's helping people heal. It's just wacky at some point.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, I'm glad we work out, Steve. And, You know, we can take care of things like that.
Yeah, not as fast as it used to be.
I got a question from Once Upon a My Time. I was going to go into that for a minute. I'm not going to get too much in detail what you went through, Steve. If anybody reads the book and reads the story, you can tell that you went through a lot of heartache, brother. But I've got some questions that would pretty much correspond to anybody that's on the phone here, and you could probably answer some things for some people. You'll see it, like avoiding confrontation, something like that. Okay, is that okay, Steve?
Yeah.
Okay. And Bruce, if you don't mind, you can go ahead and give the intro to that. Do you got the intro to that, Bruce?
Oh, the intro to chapter 3. Well,
yes, sir.
Since we've got the man here himself.
Well, he wanted to hear us and how we do. So
you guys do your thing.
I told him how good you was. So now
you
got to show
off.
He bragged
about you before you came on. So
yeah.
No, the ostensible subject of this discussion before the appearance, the apparition of Steve here on the screen was chapter 3, Once Upon My Time, which is the third chapter of Steve Ozanich's The Great Pain Deception. And in it, Steve talks about how he had back pain from the time he was 14 for 27 years, up until that point that he went to the wine shop and the proprietor, Mike, suggested that he read a book by Dr. John E. Sarno, Healing Back Pain. And Steve just told you how he rejected it and threw it across the room. But then he came back to Sarno in, you read Mind Over Back Pain. It really sounds like all of the things recorded in here in chapter 3 lead up to that one cathartic moment when you discovered Sarno. And then things started to fall in place. I know that Eric said that he wasn't going to go over all of the different trials and tribulations that Steve went through. But on page 77, there's a list of all the things that he experienced. A paralyzed left leg with loss of tendon reflex, failed laser eye surgery, destroying my eyesight, a broken elbow and a temporarily paralyzed hand, fractured tooth, that must have felt good, rapid bursts of vertigo with nystagmus.
That's the eyeballs going back and forth.
I see. Scintillating scotoma, severe tinnitus, I know about that, a thumping and screeching sound in my ear, sensations of pins and needles from my feet to my knees, bottom foot pad pain, and alternating heel pain in both feet, drop foot, rosea, ankle pain, knee pain, neck pain, plus food poisoning on top of all of this. And against these symptoms, there's a narrative that covers Steve's marriage and the trials that set in at the time of the birth of his first son when his wife was paralyzed through, I suppose, it's been judged in court now, an act of medical malpractice, of which you received recompense, but it in no way made up for the loss of your wife's legs. And then, of course, this was followed hard on after by the death of your father-in-law with leukemia named Jack. And it seemed like these were the triggers that swept you along into all of these symptoms that I've listed until you found, until you discovered Sarno. Can you describe that moment? Was there like an epiphany when you saw that everything you'd been going through was due to tension and the operations of your conscious and unconscious mind, and then it all fell into place like a puzzle?
I kind of use the puzzle as a metaphor throughout the book. That
all right.
Month by month, you know, I would find another piece of the healing puzzle, and until it was fully seen. But I think Dr. Sarno said it best. You know, he said, "Sadly, these people will not come to accept this until they get desperate." I don't know if you remember that in Healing Back Pain, he said that. You know, and it's true. It's tragic that they won't accept the truth until they become desperate. And so I had TMS long before all that stuff that you're mentioning, but that magnified everything, all those problems. And so it actually did me a favor by pushing me that hard until I got desperate enough to look at his work. You know, I was only a few weeks away from surgery, and I didn't want to have the surgery because my wife had been paralyzed from the waist down by just a simple needle. Now, I didn't want to have the back operated on, so I thought, you know, maybe this guy's onto something. Maybe I'll take a look at this guy's books. And so, you know, there's no atheists in foxholes. And so my mind began to expand a little bit as I got more afraid of the surgery. And then as you read more, he was such a good writer. It was very simple and to the point, you know, very matter of fact with what he had observed in his career. And most people who read it can see themselves, you know, on every line, at every page, you know, push themselves, perfectionistics, a little bit anxious, concerned about making sure people are happy. So, yeah, you know, it wasn't a grand epiphany, Bruce. It was more of many little pieces of the puzzle, you know, and then your mind just started to
figure it out. And then it became clear. Stage by stage, step by
right.
step.
Well, I was like everybody else. I wanted to believe it was true, but you have those doubts. You know, you say, well, you know, maybe I'm the exception. Maybe I'm the exception to the rule.
I notice that I will have doubts that will come raging out of nowhere in the middle of the night, early morning hours as I wake up. All of a sudden, there'll be something in there trying to tell me that it's physical. Oh, you better get down to the doctor right now and check out this. And then I realize I'm just obsessing. But where do you think that obsessive kind of mind comes from that looks at symptoms and then exaggerates them and catastrophizes them? Every little thing, you see this black future somewhere because of it. And that seems to be part of the TMS consciousness. It's something about our characters that do that.
Well, everybody has TMS, but I would say those people who are more chronic, they're the ones that are really like you're talking about, that you're describing, you know, catastrophizing things. Those are the ones who suffer more from the problems of it, I think. But everybody in the world has it, you know. But it's an amazing process.
But it's funny, just when I seem to be making progress and I have it down and I really believe that it is psychogenic, then this voice will come from someplace.
That's a devil on your shoulder.
It is.
Whispering doubt in your ear. Yeah. It's whispering doubt into your ear. But I wanted to know why. I knew Dr. Sarno was right. I mean, his success rate was astronomical. But I wanted to know where this was coming from. Like you just asked, you know, why does this person have this personality that would, you know, give themselves TMS? And it kept coming back to the same thing, separation anxiety, you know, as children. And so I started working with Dr. Clancy McKenzie. He's a brilliant psychiatrist. And that was his body of work. He's kind of like the Dr. Sarno of psychiatry. And he said, you know, that is the most traumatizing thing to a child, is thinking that you're going to be abandoned, you know, and you don't have to be abandoned. It's just from the eyes of the child, they think they might be. And that's where the people that come in, they become OCD, where they keep checking their doors over and over, or checking their stoves repeatedly, or checking and rechecking progress. That's that obsessive personality. It seems to keep coming back to separation and abandonment fears. There's something about being separated from mother that causes people to kind of get locked in this loop in their brain where they can't make a decision. You know,
well, I can see how it happened with me, because my parents were constantly trying to break up when I was 5 or 6 years old. My mother dragged me off in the night to Seattle when she'd tried to divorce my father and then came back together. Then there was a big episode when I was 11 and she ran off to her sister, and then they came back again. So I was chronically afraid of abandonment.
People noticed it
when I was 23 and tried to tease me about it. And I wasn't cognizant of it then. But that must be a common theme then, is that abandonment issue.
That's it. I think that's the biggest fear that we have as living beings, is being alone and isolated. And that's why it's so important when you heal from pain to get out there and stay social and can talk to people, connect with them, listen to their problems, you know, tell them about your problems and stay connected. That's where I made up that word, trichordification. I saw in my life that people are always trying to pull people to them somehow. If you can't get it through health, then by golly, you'll get it through your platform as being in pain. Like the people I was talking about who have their own radio shows and have these health problems, they have a full platform to talk to people, to vent their frustrations and fears, because they have this TMS. And they're not going to give it up for anything, because they're not being heard without it. But now they're being heard with it. And so it's very complex. I'm actually working on an article now, on a byline article, about why people don't want to heal. Because you think, you know, I see two people, I tell them, listen, you can heal. One will say no, and they'll walk away. And they'll spend the rest of their life in pain because they don't want to listen to it. Why would you think that way? Because of that same emotional process Dr. Sarno spoke about. It's protecting them. They don't want to hear it. If they actually go through with it, there's that shadow again, you know. All the problems are in the shadow, bubbling and ready to burst out. So the brain's protecting us with the TMS from all of those powerful things. And so they still need their TMS. That's why they walk away from it. The other person will say, yeah, that sounds like me. Let me look at it. And they'll more often go on to heal. And so it's an amazing process. It's the most rewarding thing you can do, is to help somebody heal. But I'm not a healer. You know, I always just show other people how to heal. You know, they're healing themselves through their own beliefs.
I do notice that as my pain subsides, in my back pain and my sciatica go down, I seem to be connecting with other people more wholeheartedly lately.
Yeah.
Out of the blue, spontaneous interactions with them that don't have any kind of hard edge to them.
That's what
that I can just walk away from. Is that one of the symptoms, one of the signs?
That's pretty cool, because I never ever put it that way myself, but I found myself doing the same thing. Just naturally drawn into just a little conversations about life, you know, because the pain actually is a way of isolating yourself from the rest of the world. You know, it cuts you off from the rest of the world. And I think personally, it's pushing us to a higher truth. You know, it's pushing you to be something more, something better, to see something more than you are. And deep inside, we know that within ourselves. And so, you know, it was a blessing. And that's why at the very end of the book, I put that little quote by Andrea Siegel in there, Dr. Siegel. She said, these people always come through their TMS more happy, fulfilled people. And that's true. That's true. And so it is a blessing, because TMS provides a catalyst for change without destroying us, without killing us. And so it was a blessing. You know, I became a better person. And you said it very eloquently there. You know, there's more compassion. There's more immediate compassion. I've had a lot of people contact me. One of them was a very great guitar player, one of the better guitar players in the world. And he was in a lot of pain. And he said, I found your book online, man. Can you help me out? I said, I think so. I mean, you have to have an open mind. Well, he did immediately. He goes, yeah, my mom's dying. His mom was dying, and his dad had died, and his brother had died, like three people within a relatively short time span.
Bang, bang, bang.
He was open to it. And he said he healed. I got the emails on the wall from a lot of people who have healed. And He said, you know what it's taught me, Steve? Compassion. And I said, I know. And at the end of my interview with Dr. Miller, he said, what has these 10 years taught you, Dr. Miller asked me. And I said, that's easy, compassion. You know, and so suffering is a way to understand other people and to understand their hearts.
Wow. That is amazing.
Steve, it's Kyle. I have a question for you.
Yes.
You say at one point, never yield to the pain. You know, I can sit in a recliner pretty much just fine. I get behind the wheel of a car and my back starts spasming and it feels like it's on fire. I don't know why. What's different about a car seat versus a recliner? But, I mean, should I just go on a three-hour drive and just try to break the horse, so to speak?
Yeah, well, that's a loaded question, because there's many things that I meant by don't yield to it. I didn't mean just physically. I meant emotionally, too. You know, don't let it beat you down where there's no hope. So that was a double-edged statement that I made there on purpose. But there's a fine line there. You don't want to ever attack your pain, like daily go out and say, I wrote that I did that to show people the mistakes that I made, to show them how I healed exactly. And they could probably heal faster than I did if they didn't make all those mistakes. But I was the bull in the china closet. You know, I had a little bit of information and I was dangerous, you know, and I went out and I kind of attacked my pain. But there was that moment where I sat down and refused to stand up, and my sitting pain left forever. It's never come back 10 years later. And so there are times when I say, you know, just don't yield to it. You know, if you just settle into it, sometimes it will give up and sometimes it will just keep increasing to challenge you back. It's all your inner stubbornness coming back to fight against you. And so don't ever purposefully attack pain, because you can empower it. But do what you want to do in your life. You know, somebody sent me an email last week, I think, about he was going on a bike ride and had knee pain. It was from the wiki. You know, and you really got to continue to go on those rides and do the things you want to do. Don't yield to it. Because when you do, you say, well, there's something structurally wrong with my body then, if you yield to it. So the point is to go do what you want to do and live your life without actually attacking the pain, you know. And so I did it with golf. You know, that was the example I used. I loved golfing, but I thought that I'd never play again. You know, I had a paralyzed foot and I lost my reflexes. I thought I was done forever. And then Dr. Sarno comes along, get out there and do more. So I thought, wow, he's either the craziest guy in the world or I'm crazy. Who's crazier, me for following him or him? And so I got out there and it was painful, but I stuck with it month after month after month, and it went away. He was 100% right. And so, yeah, I mean, he actually talked about somebody, I think he got in their car and took off driving when he told him in his office, you know, your pain's tension induced. And I think that person drove for like all day until the pain disappeared. So you can get on those binges where you just go take off and get into a marathon of sitting or riding or walking. And I believe that it will go away, or actually will shift into another part of your body. But I wouldn't purposefully attack the pain. That can empower it. Because you can see why you're falling right into the strategy is thinking about your body again. Your brain wants you to think about your body, that there's something wrong, there's something wrong, there's something wrong. And so if you go out every day and attack it, well, then you're focusing on the body just like it wants. You've been fooled once again. So the idea is to go live, like Bruce said, and go talk to people. Go to the party, you know, go help somebody, do something. And once that new passion becomes your obsession, it won't be on the body anymore. The obsession will have shifted from body to purpose. And I think the purpose-driven life is the way to live the life. You know, not obsessed and worried about the body every day. That's why I put that quote by Aristotle in the book. He said, you know, the biggest tragedy in life is worrying about the body every day. You know, that's such a waste. The body will eventually fade and disappear. Why worry about it every second? Because all it does is make the health worse. It doesn't make it any better. And so it's a paradox. You know, it's a paradox. You want to be healthier? Don't worry about the body as much.
I don't know where you say it, but you talk about the fear people have of really actually doing it and fully actualizing themselves and achieving all their full potential, and they stay locked up. They're afraid and then they're angry too at others that they see around them who are really doing it.
Right, that's part of that shadow projection and shadow casting. Yeah, all of that stuff. That's true, but I wanted to also say, you know, of course it's a fear of failing. And people say to me, you know, why you talk about criticism in the book? Well, that's it. Every waking second of our lives is trying to avoid rejection. That's the number one thing we want to do. You know, isolation is a form of rejection. If someone criticizes you, it isolates you. And it's shame and guilt are some of the most painful things. Well, probably the most painful thing that we can experience is shame. You know, it drives different careers and drives people away from families and into different careers. And it's very powerful. People will actually kill themselves rather than be shamed. That's how emotionally painful it is. And so I talked about criticism and shadow casting so people could understand that. But there's also fear, not only of being rejected, but of succeeding.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
I found that out in a lot of people, a lot of my friends even. They would purposefully trash what they were doing so they would fail. And I talked about that Annika Sorenstam, that female golfer in the book. And she was the greatest female golfer that ever lived. But when she was little, she would actually lose the tournament at the end on purpose so she didn't have to speak. She would hit shots into the trees and stuff to lose the tournament because she was so afraid to get up in front of people to speak. And so sometimes we avoid the light by failing on purpose. And so that's why it's such a complex topic when the brain's involved. You know, there's not like you can't say do this, and this, and you'll heal. It's complicated. It gets complicated.
I remember when I was in track, I always came in third because I couldn't stand second or first. And I think I deliberately did that because I didn't have the heat. There wasn't the pressure put on me. I didn't have to face myself in public.
That's very common. Very common. People don't really, you're aware enough to realize it though. Most people say, nah, I would never do that. But they don't understand this whole process is outside of awareness. It's unconscious. Oh. You know, and that's why chapter two is in there. You know, to talk about the unconscious, this is all happening. We don't know that it's happening because of repression. You know, there's a wall there. And like Dr. McKenzie told me, between what you are and what you think you are, there is a wall of repression, he told me. we put up this wall so thick of repression. Everything that doesn't agree with what we want or it hurts us emotionally, we just put it in the back of our minds. Which is the body, you know, the unconscious mind is the body. That's what Candace Pert's work was all about. Dr. Sarno mentioned her, you know, he said a lot of credit needs to go out to her, which is true. The unconscious mind's the body. That's where we store all these old memories. When you think of something in your past, it's stored in all the memory, all the cells of your body and your brain, which is part of the body. And so we recall the memory from the body. And so when your knee's hurting from remembering something in your past, that's a painful emotional memory. But as you well know, today's medicine's focused on the body. You know, it's obsessed with engineering it from the outside. You know, we'll take care of it. You just sit back, I'll take care of it. But they have to have the person in the healing equation. You know, that's why Andrew Weil did such a great job by opening up that Arizona Integrative Medicine Institute in Arizona. You know, it's about healing the person, not the body. The body's just part of the person. It's a projection of the mind. But is there anybody has any questions on just simple questions on TMS? I just don't want to block anybody out. You know what I mean? I don't want to get in here and block people out that want to talk. So I should probably let you guys talk, although it's probably save over.
Save it to Joan.
Joan?
Yeah. I just want to ask you. I want to ask you a question. When the pain is so severe, how do you ignore it?
Well, the brain creates something that you can't ignore.
What'd you say? I didn't hear you.
The brain creates something you cannot ignore. That's why it's stuck there where it's at with you. It finally found something that you just can't ignore. If you could ignore it, it would move on. You know, I used to get shoulder pain, but I would ignore it and it would shift away. I didn't fear it there. I didn't obsess on it. It couldn't hold my attention. Then it would seek to find a place that I was afraid of, that I had the most structural doubts, and there it stays right there. It won't move. And like Dr. Gwatz is one of the guys, you know, he'll tell you that it will actually, when it shifts to another part of the body, it will actually feel different. This time it feels structural. That's what the brain wants. It wants you to think that it's a structural problem. How do you ignore it? You really can't ignore it, but you can try to be more mindful, of course, and to focus on the things of the day. I always tell people they underestimate the healing power of music all the time. You know, if you put headphones on, or it will take you back in time, you know. It will take you out of your current situation, and it will take you to another time, another right. place. And that's just one thing. You know, mindfulness encompasses your everyday life. Music is one thing, you know. So there are many ways to try to, I wouldn't say ignore it. I don't know what the word would be. Is try to force your thoughts elsewhere, I guess. That's probably a better right. way of putting it. Yeah.
Thank you.
You sure?
Wow, that's awesome, Steve. Any more questions on TMS for Steve?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment about the notion of trying to ignore the pain and put your mind elsewhere. And of course, there's times when that's really, really useful. But there are also times when you should just sit yourself down and have a conversation with that pain. Because the thing is, it's trying really hard to get a message through to you. And if you don't listen, then what could happen is it could just escalate.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm glad you brought that up. You could get into the pain and start to say, what the hell is it trying to tell me? Because it's not only distracting you, it's also sending you a message. Because every reaction in life has an equal and opposite reaction. You know, you can call it karma if you want. You know, we do one thing in this moment of fabric of time, disrupts one in another. Or you can go with Newton's scientific laws, you know, cause and effect. It doesn't matter. It's all the same idea. You know, that not only is distracting you, it's also sending you a message at the same time. You know, it's important to pay attention to that message. And I would recommend that, what she just said. Whoever said that, that was a good point. I would get into that and say, why am I so angry? You know, what's going on in my life right now that's got me in this state right now? That's a better way. And I've been doing these shows, and I'm following these guys on all these radio shows. One of them, his name's Eben Alexander. He just put a book out called Proof of Heaven. I don't know if you saw that. He was a doctor, or he was a neuroscientist that died, and he claims he was taken to heaven. He was just on 60 Minutes. This is an interesting story. And there's another guy before me, another medical doctor named Emil Allen. He's promoting his book. It's called Eaten by the Tiger. And he's talking about that. Turn around and face your fears. He was operating on someone in the operating room, and he got killed by the electric scalpel. It grounded him to the floor, and it killed him while he was operating on this guy. And he fought the fight back through death, and he came back. And he's basically saying what she said, you know, turn around and look at it. Eaten by the tiger. All my life, he said, I was running away from my fears. I spent every waking second trying to run from my health and all this. And when you finally have the courage to turn around and let the tiger eat you, all of those problems fade. And so, yeah, she's right. Listen to that message. You know, like right now, if my elbow locks up or something begins to bother me, I start to think, all right, what's going on? I start to think about what's happening. I wouldn't try to just think about something else. Although that is a technique sometimes to use, is to think about something else. I actually had the pain jump from one part of my body to another, thinking about the good part of the body. So I knew he was right. It's a laser-like focus on the body. I only said those things in a book to try to break that laser focus, you know. I threw the kitchen sink at everybody, hoping some things would stick with some people here and there. And it's working. It's working nicely, you know. It's very, very rewarding. But is there any other questions? That was a good point, by the way, whoever said that. No questions?
On that, I think that's great that you've got so many different viewpoints represented in your book, because the fact is that different things work for different people at different times, right? So there really isn't any one way, except to know that TMS is quite often your subconscious trying to get in touch, and your conscious not being willing to hear it, you know, right. And that's the gist of it as far as I can tell. And the way you get past that, well, it's so individual. It's like we're all unique and we all have a unique path, but we can share, which is what's so wonderful about this discussion and the forums and so forth. So thank you. That was great.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, and if anything from Dr. Sarno's work that we can take, it's that we're okay physically and that there's something psychological happening there. He's absolutely right there, and he's never failed on that point. Beyond that, he never really went into any method or methodology because he simply was a scientist, and it wasn't his field, you know? So he developed a close working relationship with a lot of the psychologists there, and they began to work with people and to see what worked and what didn't work. But he never really endorsed one type of philosophical ideology. I know a lot of people tried to get him to endorse what was the one from Texas? I can't remember. Oh, was it Michael Brown? Is that the author's name?
He's from Australia.
Is that it is? What was
the presence process?
Yeah. They kept saying to Dr. Sarno, what about the presence process? They even sent him. He got dozens of those books in the mail. Presence process. And he started to read it the last time I saw, but he had never come to a affirmative conclusion. You know, he said, it looks okay. It looks good, but he never endorsed it because he just didn't do that. You know, he was a medical pain doctor, and that's what he stuck to. But that lightning process might be worth looking into. You know, I'd like to see what the course looks like. I bought the book online, but it's just talking about the course. It's not the course. But I agree with everything that guy said in anxiety, how all these anxious thoughts coalesce, and it becomes like a mountain on top of your back. It starts off with this little problem in the day. And then all these past problems, they coalesce into this big bundle of problems, and then you get all locked up. And he's talking about changing how your thinking process is to try to change the physiological response. And he's had a lot of success with pain, chronic fatigue. He even mentioned some multiple sclerosis problems in there. And I got a hold of him. He hasn't responded yet. I want to see about maybe working with him. He's from England. His name's Phil Parker. But there's many ways, many ways to heal. And I think Alfred Adler's right. There's no one ideology that's good for everybody. You've got to somehow find what that person's problem is right there. And that's why the psychologists and psychiatrists have jobs, you know. If we could figure it out, they would all be out of work.
Well, it seems to be we can figure it out, you know, because working together like this is, you know, there's a new answer every day to take a look at and see if it fits you and pass it on to somebody else you know is a possibility. So, yeah, I think we can work it out. I've always thought that with a little training we could get away without very many psychologists myself.
Well, that's why I think he developed this peer network for this very purpose.
Yay for us.
Yeah, for us.
And I think, this is Sandra, and I think there's just such incredible power with peers and peer support. I mean, who better to talk out your issues with than people who understand exactly what you're going through, right?
I remember Dr. Andrew Weil said that in his book. I think it was called Spontaneous Healing. Mm-hmm. He said it's more powerful and more effective when to go to someone who has healed from what you had than it is for a doctor to sit there and talk to you, because there's something powerful about being next to that person that actually did it, that strengthens your belief, the deepest beliefs within you, because it's our belief that rules our life. What we believe happens to us will happen to us. If we believe that our bodies are falling apart, well, they'll fall apart. And that's what the industry is really based on, is keeping you constantly afraid and broken. You know, you see the commercials. Oh, the first sign that you have any twinge in your elbow, you better get to the doctor right away, man. It could be this, 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 and this. Well, they've got people gridlocked in fear all the time. You know, and of course, there's the double-edged sword, too, because what if it was something dangerous, you know? And so you're like, I don't know what to do. But the best thing is just to get a physical to make sure you're generally healthy. But, you know, Andrew Weil was right. You know, go to somebody who's healed from that. And I realized that when people contact me, that's the reason they're contacting me, because I healed. And I knew that that would happen when I wrote the book. And that's why I wanted to write it. Because I was going to the people that had already healed with Dr. Sarno, and I was begging them for information back in the late 1990s. I was asking them all kinds of questions. How about this, 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 and this? Because there was something about knowing they did it that's more powerful to the to our belief system. It's that simple, you know? And hopefully, you know, people will get the right information. As Dr. Sofer likes to call it, accurate thinking. He didn't really call it right thinking or wrong thinking, just accurate thinking. And we're being fed the wrong information in the medical industry. You know, and Dr. Sarno's a pioneer. He's a pioneer.
Steve, last year when you told me, I put my story on the forum, on a forum, not the wiki, but another forum, and I put my story on there. You was the first one that came on there and answered me, and all you said was, it sounds like you got TMS. And when you said that, that's all I needed to hear. From that day forth, there wasn't no backing down for me. I went forth. It was just from you saying that it sounds like you got it. And well, I didn't know that you had even written a book at that time. I just knew that everybody liked you, and you know, you was a pretty smart fella. But the more I got to know about you, and then I went and got your book, and the more I learned, man, it changed my life. Just from sitting there and having somebody that actually healed from it tell me, hey, brother, sounds like you got it, you know? And I just want to say it on public radio, man. Thank you, bro. You know? I mean, you really know your stuff.
That's so nice of you to say. It's very powerful. Every time you hear it, it's like a high. You know, when somebody says that they healed, it's like a drug. I can't get enough of it. You get addicted to it after a while. Because when I finally got Dr. Sarno on the phone, right before he retired, I got him on the phone. And I said, before you say anything, I just want to thank you for saving my life. But I suppose you're tired of hearing that. And he said, Steve, I'm never tired of hearing that. And now I know exactly what he means. You could never get over that feeling, you know, because every time you help somebody else, you've helped yourself. I don't remember talking to you. I've talked to probably 20,000 people over the last 12 years. But pretty much all of them have had TMS, you know, but convincing them, like you didn't need much convincing, you just said, you know. But I know people that go from TMS doctor to TMS doctor all around the country. That's not enough. I need another TMS doctor to tell me. Now I need another TMS doctor. You can tell what they're doing. They're putting off the work that needs to be done, that painful emotional work. You know, and they've got to get down to do that. And I think it comes back to what Bruce and I were talking about, that separation anxiety. You know, I think the greater that it was, the more OCD you become in everything that you do, that you have to keep repeating things because you don't have that calm. There's that sense of love and peace and acceptance within you that seems to be missing in people who felt abandoned at some point. And I think love will help those people. It's the only thing that will work. You know, it's to be loved and then to know that they're loved.
That's awesome.
Do you think it's an attempt to control what can't really be controlled?
Is this Kyle?
Is that?
Yeah.
Who is it? Yeah, good point. I think so. I said, I think in the book there, that OCD is a means of control. If you never actually step into the situation, you're fine. You're safe in your mind, you know? Like I have people tell me, Steve, I can't get out of my house. I have to keep checking the lock 200-300 times. And I said, yeah, because they're afraid to let go of that branch to fly, you know, because once you leave your safe zone, you're out of control. And one of the big reasons people have TMS is because they like control. They want control of everything in their lives. And you can't control everything. And so you get gridlocked in this pain syndrome, you know, and all these TMS equivalents. And you have to let go of all those things. And it's easy for me to say, you know, I can say that, but it's hard for them to do, you know, it's very hard. And I have a lot of compassion and sympathy for them. And I'd never tell them, oh, you know, just get out and do it or, you know, tough love. I'd never do that. No way. Because what they really need is to hear is that somebody cares, That's really what they want to know. When they're looking for help, when they email me or they call me, they're looking to know if somebody cares, because they feel like no one does, you know? And so I do care. I really want people to heal. It's a rewarding thing for me, you know? So who am I in this for, them or me, right? Well, the thing is that it's the same thing. We're the same thing. We're the same being, you know? And so when I help them, I'm helping myself. And I think that's what we're meant to do, is help each other. So if anybody has any questions, just email me. I try to answer everybody. It may take me a while, but I try to answer everybody, because I know there's a lot of people that are absolutely desperate. I mean, there are people that are on the edge of suicide that have contacted me, and it's tough. It's really tough. I know how the pain can drag you down into the gutter, but there's hope. I want anybody that reads this forum and reads my book to know that there is hope. And I've seen some amazing healings. People that could not function heal, and it's fun. It's really fun. You know, it's exciting. And we're just at the tip of the spear here. You know, this TMS Wiki is not that old, and the book's only been out a year, and Dr. Sarno is really, his name's really beginning to spread now. He laid this track about, 35, 40 years ago, and it's just now making headway with all these things like the TMS Wiki and all these books. There's a bunch more TMS books coming out right now, because when anybody heals, they want to pass that on. I mean, they're so happy to try to help other people, and they're so excited. And the cool thing is that they're going to have a different take on healing than I took, you know. They're going to come from this angle, another one will come from this angle, and it's really exciting. I want to read them all, too, but I haven't had time because of my own work. I haven't had time to read that Pathways to Pain Relief yet, but that's one I really like to get into to see what they said. But it's exciting.
Good one. Oh, sorry. I said that's a good one.
Oh, was it a good one?
I really enjoyed it.
I
went over it in detail here on these discussion groups, chapter by chapter.
Oh, that's good.
Analyzing what was going on with each one of the patients.
That's
common themes. Yeah, it's common to all people with TMS. But,
yeah, it was. We had
some very hard cases in there.
Yeah.
People with dreams that I wouldn't want to have. they were frozen. You know, it was an indication of how much they were frozen up inside, and how they weren't in touch with their unconscious, but their dreams would come and hit them in the face.
That's why.
A message.
Glancy McKenzie does dream programming, and he said it's never failed to give the wrong advice. He believes that the answers are there for us all the time, you know, and all we do is ask, which is true. You know, he goes, most people won't ask, but he has these little paragraph that he has people program their dreams to tell them why they have shoulder pain or obstructed bowel or anxiety. And he claims in 40 years, it's never given the wrong advice. Now, all the time, it doesn't give a clear advice. But he's done it with a lot of great success. It's very interesting, because it's probably true, because if the answers are in that shadow we're talking about, that all the shadow lies 100% in the unconscious. And the dreams, of course, are the unconscious rising up. So he's saying consciously ask before you sleep. And most often it will bring that answer to the surface. There's another guy that did that too. I think Dr. Murphy. Did you read The Power of Suggestion? The power of the subconscious mind.
The power of the subconscious mind.
That was a good book, Dr. Murphy, the Doctor of Divinity. That was amazing.
Oh yeah, it's an awesome book. I've quoted a lot from him. He's whoa.
Yeah, he's
what
gone.
What was the previous book? I'm sorry, this is Kyle. What was the previous book you were talking about? That's about the dreams and.
That's
the pain relief.
Yeah, that's not a book. Oh, that one there, that wasn't about... Oh, yeah, maybe you did start talking about dreams there. The one I was talking about wasn't a book. It was just Dr. McKenzie's work. But Bruce was talking about Pathways to Pain Relief.
Okay.
I haven't had a chance to read it, but
Anderson and Sherman, they were the two principal psychotherapists that Dr. Sarno referred his patients to when they were hard cases. And... they do a lot of analysis of the dreams experienced by different patients TMS patients.
That's, you know what you're saying there when you say all this, guys, is that if our dreams give us good feedback that we should listen to, then so does our pain, because it's from the same source, you know. So the thing that we're so afraid of, the conscious knowledge of what's going on in our unconscious, is it's a waste of time. We're missing really good information. It would be just as bad to ignore dreams that tell us, that give us information about what to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I remember McKenzie, he was saying that dreams are often confusing on purpose. Because we're also ashamed in our dreams. And so sometimes the brain will hide these things in these really weird, bizarre things like clowns, you know, and birds. Like, why did I have three heads into that night, you know? He said, because it's also trying to hide that shame and trying to keep it confused. It's also embarrassed. The shame is the most powerful thing I think we could probably experience. You know, and we learn that early on as little kids when the persona begins to form in the first early years of life, when we first begin to realize there are other people in the world and we're not the center of the world, because babies think that they are. You know, I am the center. And then when we hit about 4 or 5 years old, we realize, hey, I can't do everything I want. There are other people too. And so the persona begins to form, which is the false self. It begins to form to put up this face with that it thinks other people want to see. And then, of course, if it controls your life, then that's it. I mean, that's a miserable life. To try to live according to what everybody else wants is very tough, very tough.
Freud called that narcissistic scarring.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like when you leave the crib and you realize that you aren't the center anymore.
Yeah,
some people never get over that shock, do they?
No, some people haven't learned that they're not the center.
Wow. This is awesome. This has been an awesome night. Let's take one more question. It's getting real late tonight, and I'm sure Steve's probably getting tired. But then again, I'm sure Steve's got the strength of Samson over here. I know he does. I've done read his book. Let's take one more question before we call it a night so we can all get us.
I kept thinking of Job myself.
Oh, you're just thinking of Job?
Trials and tribulations.
Well, yeah. And then after Job, yeah. And then he turns into Samson. Yeah.
Believe it or not, I've gotten some stories from people that are way worse than mine. I was just shocked when I heard all that they'd been through. You know, there are some tragedies out there in the world. People are right now living through a lot of pain and suffering in their lives. And we have to always be aware of that. You know, it's important for us to have fun and enjoy life. Of course, we're meant to enjoy life. We're not supposed to be suffering. But suffering does give us the compassion to understand those people. And right now, there are a lot of people emailing me. And I feel helpless at times because I'm not a trained psychologist. You know, all I can do is just listen to them and tell them what I did and what I've heard other people do. And so just remember, there are a lot of people that are suffering out there. Is there any more questions?
Well, so, Steve, I wanted to ask you, what do you think is the best advice? If you could just give a short bit of advice to someone who's investigating TMS, like what do they have to do to have a good shot at healing using Sarno's methods and your methods?
Wow, that's a good question. You know, you're thinking of somebody who's just coming into it, doesn't know a lot about it.
Yeah, exactly. Like I think probably what I tell people when I run into them, I say you just have to have patience. But I'm sure there's lots of other qualities that matter. You know, you can't just quit. You know, you have to be tenacious, kind of thing. Well, but I wondered what you thought.
Well, Dr. Sarno, when the patients went to see him, the first thing he would ask them is, can you accept this notion that your body's fine and that you're experiencing something that outside of your awareness? So that's it right off the bat. He said, 80% or so would say, nope, I saw my MRIs. I can't accept that. And so the first thing was to ask them, would you accept it? Now, Dr. Guatz has a good philosophy. He says, leave the TMS books on the coffee table. Because if you go to try to tell them what's wrong, they will run away like deer in the headlights, you know. They will run. But if they pick it up and it's their idea, you know, and a lot of the women will say this out there, you know, you got to make your husband think it was his idea for you guys to do it. But the truth is they really have
probably works for women too.
Yeah, you know, it's true. You know, it's more powerful if they think it was their idea. And so and they have to accept it. You know, you can't heal unless you believe that you have this. And so belief is everything, but acceptance is the first thing. But, you know, like I think Dr. Sano always said it best, you know, is the first step is gathering the knowledge. He said there were two pillars in healing. The first one was the gathering of the information of the acquisition of how you got into this disorder. And then the second one was acting on that. And so the first stage for anybody listening is to gather the information and read Dr. Sarno's books, you know, and I know at one point it will get confusing when there's going to be probably 100 TMS books, but find the one that works for you. You know, find the one that works for you. What you're looking for is something that will alter your belief that will begin to change your physiology. And so gather that information, and you got to accept the fact that you have TMS. Eric just said a little bit ago he accepted it right off the bat, and so he probably healed faster than most people would. You know, the faster you do accept it, the faster you're going to heal. But that doubt, like Bruce said, a doubt will come along in the middle of the night and it will make your heart race. And that's, I think we're always going to have that as human beings. We're going to have that little doubt inside of us. You know, sometimes I look back and go, did I heal from all that crap? Did I really heal? You know, it's kind of
I'm still stunned, Steve. I'm still in shock. Yeah. I'm sitting here right now looking at you, and I'm in shock, man. I'm looking at Bruce, and he's over there climbing mountains, and I'm in shock. I'm going out there and lifting weights, and I'm in shock to where last year I was bedridden. I'm in shock, bro. I'm in shock of joy. I'm in shock of my face back. I can't believe that this happened. Everything I ever heard about hope, faith, trust, belief, it's all true. It's all true.
They sound like old cliche lines, but it's all true. You know, that's why they've standed the test of time, because every millennium you're going through the same thing. It's the same things as people. We will always fear death. You know, it's like Dr. Zaffarini said to me, I'm afraid of dying too. He realizes that a lot of people come in to see him, you know, they're afraid of that, you know, and they get gridlocked into these repetitive behaviors and the obsession on the body. And he was in a lot of pain when he went to see Dr. Sarno, you know, and Dr. Sarno helped him to heal. And Dr. Zaffarides has dedicated his entire psychiatric career to Dr. Sarno's work and to helping people heal. It's a really noble cause. He's a great guy, by the way. I met him last Christmas. I didn't know, but he went to the same college that I did. And so we met in the town in Youngstown here. He's a really good guy, and he really wants to help people. It's very important to him to help people. And yeah, he said, Dr. Sarno saved my life. I said, I know, he saved my life too.
Awesome. You
know? And I never did get to meet Dr. Sarno, but I talked to him, and I email him. But I probably never will get to meet him. But
we can pass it on.
Yeah, yeah. The best honor I can give him is to just pass his truth on to other people.
You know,
and my book in many ways is pulling all of his work together and showing how it works in my life.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Probably. I totally agree.
Yeah, I think you were a test bed.
Patient.
Yeah, yeah. I was a
yeah. Into stress testing.
You know,
take an idea and push it to its furthest limit.
Yeah, you know,
everyone talks about you and the
27 years.
Out of the driving range. Shooting 1,000 balls like that.
Yeah,
I think everyone has been there and knows what that feeling is about.
I was shocked to see how many people with TMS were actual marathon runners. See, that's also that repetitive thing that we're talking about, that repetitive behavior. You know, these people like to hit the road. That's how they feel free. They do it over and over and over. I mean, marathon after marathon, you know, and, that psychological conflict is where creativity comes from. I don't want people to think it's a bad thing. You know, that's where some of the greatest minds in history came from, was the psychological conflict. When you look at great writers and screenplay people and musicians, that conflict created some brilliant music that came through them. But that's how they express themselves. these people are expressing themselves through pain and TMS. They need to learn how to express themselves. They have TMS because they never learned how to express themselves. They were told as children that it was bad to get angry. You know, good kids are heard, you know. I've heard Dr. Sarno say that. Good children are seen and not heard, you know. So the kids learn how to repress immediately as little kids. They when they got frustrated and scared, they were afraid to go to their parents and to tell them about their feelings. And so they learned as adults to just forget about all that stuff, just forget about those feelings. They never learned how to properly express themselves. And so I always encourage people to go out and paint or learn how to play an instrument or learn how to dance, because those things are ways that people express themselves through dancing and artwork and things like that. Or architecture, it doesn't matter what it is. Learn how to express yourself through your deeds, you know, and get it out of your body, you know. And I think that's why the journaling helps so many people. They're expressing themselves. And they're always asking me, am I journaling correctly? Well, it's just like healing. There's no one way to journal. You know, I would do it whenever I felt like it, you know. I studied the work of Ira Prograf, though. He was considered the father of journaling. And you probably could talk about that when you get to the journaling chapter. But he's got a method. It's called the intensive journaling method, where he breaks it up into different facets of the paperwork of your childhood and different things. And that might work, too. I don't know. I healed just by forcing myself to heal. I forced myself to heal.
Well, you said dancing, Steve. Did you do belly dancing yourself?
No, but I am a voyeur.
You know, when you mentioned belly dancing in your book, I could just see you hula hooping with a hula hoop.
Yeah. You know, the first time I noticed that I didn't have TMS pain in my life was when I got up to dance one time at a wedding. Yeah. And I sat back down and I realized, hey, wait a minute. For 5 minutes, I had no pain. That Sarno guy could be onto something. One of those little healing pieces of the puzzle. And then I ran into other people who said, yeah, the first time I didn't have pain, I got up and was dancing. Because dancing is a loss of control, you know, where TMS is always trying to control everything. You're losing control when you're dancing. And when you're laughing at a funny movie, you're losing control. So it's good to get out there and lose a little bit of control. You're trying to get rid of the stranglehold that superego has on you, to always be in control, to always look right, to always be perfect. So that chapter was very important up front to talk about, you know, this is what you're facing, something that you're not aware that you're even doing. And so, you know, the rest of the book's about the story of healing and then how to heal and then philosophy. Hopefully it answers some questions, but I want people to go ahead and talk about it sometime. You know, I don't really want to come back and interrupt people, but I wanted to let everyone know that I'm here if they have any questions.
Steve, you didn't interrupt nobody, brother. You came in here tonight and you did a lot of healing. This will be listened to time and time and time again, brother. We just all thankful that you here and that you took your time out to spend some time with us.
This is a good time.
Yeah, we all feel, you know, it's awesome to, you know, be a community and be able to hear your voice, and you're here spending your time with us. This is awesome, Steve.
Yeah, it's really fun.
You answer so many of my questions without my having to ask.
Yes, I thank you.
The answers are coming to me all the time.
You know, it's so obvious.
So
read it over and over. You know, it's a type of thing that you have to read a lot. You know, like Dr. Sarno said, keep integrating that information. Keep repeating it until something clicks in your brain. You know, and it's deep within the brain where the amygdala is at, where the fear center is. It's always looking for, scanning for safety. The amygdala, it's always on high alert, especially in a type T person. It seems to be stuck in the on position all the time. They're always scanning for criticisms, rejections, harm to their bodies. And what you're trying to get to is pumping this information into the frontal cortex of the brain. So it seeps into the deeper part of the brain and finally went, aha, I'm not afraid anymore. You know, not everyone has an aha moment, but a lot of people do. Sometimes it just slowly fades. You know, everybody heals differently. And so hopefully they'll try everything. I've got a lot of emails where they said, I tried this and that and it worked. Well, that's good. Other people say that didn't work. I had to do this. So yeah, everybody's unique, you know, very unique. And so I'd like to come back sometime and talk to the folks. And Forrest sure. wants me to come back and talk too. It's fun. I'm glad that he set this up. This is very nice. And you people are great people. I think I agree with Dr. Sarno again when he said that he looks back on all his patients that he had over the years, and he said he really admired them, you know. And it does come from trying to be good, he said. After 50 years of doing this, he said, you know, they're trying to be good people. They want to do what's good. They want to do what's right. And this is causing them all kinds of pain, you know. And so I see the same thing. You know, the people are very, very nice people. The funnest thing about writing the book is meeting the people. They've all been great. They've all been really fun. It's been a really cool journey. I just wish I had a little more power, like as a medical doctor, to help a little bit more. But I can help from my viewpoint, you know, how I saw it and how I've helped people. That's all I can do. But it's been rewarding.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Next week will be chapter 4, guys. Chasing the Changes, A Time for Reflections. A Retirement for Reflection. That's what we'll be studying or discussing next week.
That was kind of transition chapter. Yeah. I listed my problems in chapter 3. I found Dr. Sarno's work. And then once I found it, I had to sit back and think about it. You know, I had to kind of begin accepting it. So that chapter 4 is just basically reflecting on what he was saying and what I'd gone through in my life, what I had experienced. And then chapter 5 is about, you know, that jumping in, acting on that knowledge. Like he said, pillar number 2.
Yeah.
I began to act on that knowledge. Yeah. And I did some wrong things there, but I wanted to show people, you know, the things that kind of delayed my healing. I was still focusing on the body while I was healing. That was a major mistake. You know, I was trying to heal. Never try to heal because you're playing right into the strategy of your brain again. Go live your life without worries. If you try to heal, you're doing what the brain wants, obsessing on the body one more time, you know. So there's a lot more to learn. So, yes, like the lady asked earlier, where should you start? Gather the information, you know, and then accept it. Because if you don't accept it, it's going to be a long, tough life. But
yes.
There's many more things to learn, and I'm sure you guys are covering them. I love what Bruce did there. He summarized that. That was kind of cool. I would like to hear how he summarizes all those chapters. It's very interesting to have written it and then to come back and hear how somebody talked about it.
I wanted to be brief, so I just found the most simple way to concentrate all of the information in one, you know, in a couple of paragraphs.
Yeah. You can write the Cliff Notes version of my book. We'll sell it.
All right, Cliff Notes. All right.
TMS for Dummies. You know, TMS for Dummies, about 10 pages. You could probably summarize my book.
Okay, guys. I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to go ahead and end the recording now, and then we can chat some after that. Okay.
All